On Sunday night, 15 people were shot by a lone gunman in Toronto's Greektown. A 10-year-old girl and an 18-year-old woman are among those killed. This comes, of course, as Toronto is still reeling from a van attack 3 months ago that killed 10 people. These types of events are not common in Toronto. They carry a huge impact. That's what we're talking about today, the impact something like this has on those directly involved, the impact it has on the community, and the impact it has on whatever perspective you may have of the city. I'm Claire Broussard. I'm the producer of the Big Story podcast, filling in today for Jordan while he's away.
I would be very surprised if you don't see humans physically coming together, where we feel the need to literally look each other in the eye and just say, this isn't who we are and we're here for each other. That is the way we can cope with this.
Steve Jordans is a professor of psychology at the University of Toronto Scarborough campus. If this happened in a crowded area, lots of witnesses, how many people are directly affected by something like this?
Well, you know, it's really a question of how many people felt suddenly that their lives were at risk. That's the real factor that kind of kicks us all off. I like to kind of compare it to, for example, the cave rescue that we know so much. And, you know, those boys, it probably gradually dawned on them that their lives were at risk, like over a very long period of time, versus a situation where suddenly shots ring out. And suddenly you feel like, oh my gosh, I'm in danger. And that's when the brain kind of kicks in these systems. And it does two things. One is the obvious. It kicks in what we call our sympathetic nervous system, which is our fight or flight system. And so in a case like Sunday night, that would probably, for most people, be flight. But, you know, every now and then we see somebody take on an assailant, and that's their fight system that's going to it. But the other thing the brain does, and it's a real kind of evolutionary kind of trace, but it kind of recalls the events or the stimuli that were apparent just before the attack, and it connects those to that feeling that we're having. And it's doing that to try to make us better predictors of danger in the future. It was a system that was more useful when we're, say, in the woods, and maybe you smell something that doesn't seem quite normal or you heard some odd sound. And then suddenly a predator emerged, and you had to fight or flee. But assuming you survived, then the next time when you smell that smell or you hear that sound, you already become ready to fight or flee before the predator arrives. And so that's what the system is meant to do, to make us ready to escape danger before the danger happens. The problem is, in the modern world, dangers are so random. There were people sitting in a coffee shop, relaxing. Maybe the coffee grinder went just, you know, for one moment, and somebody sort of subconsciously noticed that, and then the shots rang out. And so now our brain connects that sound of a coffee grinder with this feeling of fear and imminent death. And 2 weeks later, this person could, you know, hear a coffee grinder and be brought right back there because of that same system.
In what ways, big or small, can the trauma that comes from witnessing an event like this one on Sunday affect someone's daily life?
Yeah, I mean, because of the random connections that can happen, it can be just sort of these things like a minefield, as it were, a psychological minefield where they can be going through their life. And, you know, if we take that coffee grinder example, you don't know when you're going to happen to be around somewhere where a coffee grinder goes off, somebody grinds some coffee. And so this person can be just going through life, and then suddenly something triggers this reaction. And when it triggers the reaction, they feel full-blown, you know, fear, that they're really kind of scared for their life at that moment. And so, you know, it can be very difficult. And in cases of panic attacks, which is really the exact same process, except the person can't find the stimulus. They don't know what's causing it, but they feel those feelings. Those people, you know, if that happened in a subway car, for instance, as soon as that subway opens, you're going to go running out of the car and probably running out in the street and just trying to escape some unknown danger. And, you know, if you're with an important business client, when you do that, you've probably just blown that business relationship. So, you know, there's all sorts of things in terms of both the psychology that you are experiencing, but also the impact it can have on just sort of normal life.
What's a healthy way to deal with that kind of trauma?
Well, I mean, if it's real full-out post-traumatic stress, then really some sort of therapy is needed. And for a long time, we've had trouble dealing with that. There's a little bit more hope than there used to be. I mean, thanks to all the wars and stuff humans get into, we always have a lot of post-traumatic stress disorder happening. And so we've been trying to help people for a long time. Recently, kind of an interesting approach is had a lot of research on it in the Netherlands, and it's starting to spread out. Uses something called beta blockers. So beta blockers are these drugs that actually prevent that fight or flee triggering that I just told you about. It kind of turns off your spider sense, and you don't go into that fight or flee mode. You don't really want this most of the time because that fight or flee mode is handy every now and then. It gets us out of trouble. But in a therapeutic context, people can, for example, like the Sunday night incident, if they were in it, they can be asked to relive it, to kind of re-experience it. Without the beta blockers, they would instantly go into the panic mode, and so that wouldn't be good for their therapy. But with the beta blockers, they can kind of keep that cool head. They can relive the experience and think it through and not have that panic kind of feeling. And it seems like if you allow people to do that a number of times, to kind of re-experience the event with their emotion kind of cut off, as it were, that some of the strength of that emotional link seems to decline over time. And so they become better at doing that without the beta blockers as well. So that's a semi-big hope now that's still getting a lot of research. But, that would be one approach that we're now using.
Do we have enough services to help victims?
No. I mean, generally, sorry, I really shouldn't laugh with that one because it's anything but funny. But the reason I do that is because the answer is so strongly no in many cases. I mean, mental health in general is becoming a major challenge for society as we talk about it more, which is a good thing. But as we talk about it more, it comes out of the shadows more, and we have a sense of just how many people are affected by something. So in a case like this, there will probably be a lot of people who are psychologically affected. And often there's a sort of triage response where, you know, we bring out a bunch of mental health service providers and people to kind of help people on the scene. But there can be long-term effects, and they're really, you know, often a lot of people who have, for example, family members who have any sort of mental health issue will tell you right away that society doesn't do a good job dealing with it. We're not really good at it. We're not really sure how to do it well yet. You know, there are some things we have good therapies for, but the sheer volume of the issues that are out there is a real challenge to society. So, you know, I'd love to answer that with a strong yes, but my fear is more that that no, it's going to be a challenge for a lot of people, and they're going to have a hard time getting support.
In terms of the community coming together, there's, you know, huge digital social reactions. Torontonians tweeting with the hashtag Toronto Strong, and there's, you know, forums online full of people asking how they can band together in the face of tragedy. How do these reactions help or hurt us?
Well, I think they are completely a response. So first of all, our best way of dealing with stress, period, is to connect with other human beings. It's not a coincidence that in a lot of cases of, you know, mental health counseling or any kind of counseling at all, that we have these groups of people who are in a similar situation sharing their experiences and to some extent just sort of being there for one another. So these social bonds are the antithesis to fear, stress, anxiety. And so I think you literally see that when this fear enters the world, we as humans have a natural reaction of pulling together as our way of kind of combating that. So you do see that on social media, which is kind of interesting because social media is, I guess, social relations light, you could call it. Like they're there, but they tend to be shallower social relations. So they're very quick and easy, so you see that at first. But I would be very surprised if you don't see humans physically coming together. And probably the Danforth area, you know, will host some sort of gathering of Torontonians where we feel the need to literally look each other in the eye and just say, this isn't who we are, and we're here for each other. That is the way we can cope with this. you know, on the interesting flip side, and we have no idea at all, but very often the people who commit these sorts of acts, that's also what they're lacking, is that social connectivity. They've often become outcasts at some early point in time. And without that, you know, it just shows how important those social bonds are. Without those social bonds of any sort, humans tend to get to feel a lot more angry, and that's often when they will lash out at the humans who they feel disconnected from. So, you know, it may be in many cases, and we don't know the details of this at all, but in many cases you kind of see that on both ends of the event, where a lack of social bond might have been a core part of this happening in the first place, but then this social coming together of a community is the way they react to the event itself.
All right, I want to talk about the city now and this image that people have, either of it being a safe city or a dangerous city. I myself see it as a safe city. I trust the numbers. But how does an event like this change a perspective about Toronto?
Yeah, so it's interesting that you say I trust the numbers. You know, that would ultimately be the accurate way. If we were all like Spock, I guess we would just sort of decide how safe places are based on the actual statistics that we have at that place, and we could do so. The brain isn't used to having access to all those statistics, so it often estimates probabilities in weird ways, and there are these so-called heuristics that it uses to estimate how likely something is. One of them is called the availability heuristic, which means if somebody asks you about some event, how likely is it, you kind of think about it, and if you can bring to mind quite easily a number of examples, then, you know, you use those examples that come to mind to kind of form your estimate. The tricky thing we've got with Toronto lately is we're getting, you know, from the summer of the gun on, we're getting a number of these very startling examples of the kinds of incidents that never happened in Toronto before. And so when somebody is confronted with that question, is Toronto a safe city? Like never before, we can remember all of these situations where it was not safe. And because they come to mind readily, they do bias our view. And we probably all now have a feeling that Toronto is far less safe, certainly than it was, which could be accurate, but also than it is relative to other cities. And in fact, I think a lot of Torontonians now are struggling with the sense that we may be like other cities, and I think we thought we weren't. I think we thought there were certain factors that were in play that made us different, factors like our ability for mutual respect. I think Torontonians feel like we are a model of mutual respect, that we can accept differences among each other, tolerate them, and in fact enjoy them and make use of them. And we also generally think of ourselves as friendly, polite people who want to help one another. So we have this sort of positive view of ourselves that we've had, I think, for a very long time. But a lot of these events kind of fly in the face of that. And I think a lot of our first reactions are some sort of disgust, that disgust that this is happening in our city. And I think that kind of makes us have to face the fact that, you know, maybe these are the kind of things in the modern world, as guns become more prevalent and everything, maybe these are the kinds of things that will happen in any city. And maybe we are not special after all. And I think for a lot of us, that's not a nice thing to kind of be thinking about. It doesn't feel like it belongs here. It doesn't feel that way to me anyway.
Right. We've always kind of felt like we're immune to it.
Yeah. There is, by the way, another reaction that I bet we will see very commonly in a community. When a community is attacked in some way, it begins with the shock, it begins with the fear, but very often there's then followed by a social pulling together, a literal, you know, what we saw that with the van attack of people coming down to Mel Lastman Square, I think, gathering all together, and there were people from different faiths, and basically the message is, we are all together, this is not who we are, you know, what you're seeing now is the real city. So I suspect we'll see that start to happen pretty soon, once the sort of shock of the event wears off, and in this case it could be, you know, more Danforth based, maybe more Greektown based, but it could also be the city as a whole coming to the Greektown community and basically saying, you know, we're with you. And we see this already from political leaders and stuff, people saying, you know, Toronto, we're thinking about you. So that's a very common reaction, and maybe the upside to this. Maybe there is this sense of reflection and this sense of, no, that's not us, that we see play out. And that's the positive that these events can sometimes bring.
Steve Jordan's professor of psychology at the University of Toronto Scarborough campus. That was The Big Story. For more, you can find us online at thebigstorypodcast.ca. You can also follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Big Story Podcast. And of course, subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. We have a couple of really cool guest hosts coming in for the rest of the week, and some stories that we're working on for the future include who is allowed to talk about money, just what exactly is going on with Ontario's sex ed curriculum, and what is the best place to live in Canada? You might be surprised. I'm Claire Broussard. Thanks for listening.